Thank you, George, and lovely to be here with all of you today in this wonderful, wonderful offering of the Sunday session with Sangha Life. Very happy to be here. And as George said, we'll begin the session with a meditation together. And so I invite you to find your seat, to find your posture for this time, and to take the time that you need to settle in to your meditation posture. As you're doing this, inviting the awareness into the body and seeing if there's anything that you can do, that you can attune, fine-tune, so that the body is as stable, as steady, as supported as possible. As we're doing this, gently guiding, inviting the awareness into the body. Settling the awareness into the body, attending to the posture. Fine-tuning the posture. Inviting the awareness more deeply into the body. Bringing attention to the sensations of contact between the body and the seat, the body and the ground. Feeling those sensations of contact opening to those sensations of contact between the body and that which supports the body. Feeling the body rest into the contact. Awareness, rooting, grounding, collecting and gathering in the sensations of contact between the body and that which supports the body. As we practice in this way, perhaps we find the body settling more fully into the support of the seat and the ground. Awareness settling more fully into the body. Rooting, gathering, collecting. Grounding. It's widening the awareness of the contact to the whole base of the body. Buttocks and the legs, the hips, the pelvis, the whole base of the body. Supported by the contact with the seat and the ground. That contact, that base supporting the whole body. For the first part of the practice, exploring that sense of groundedness in the contact, the whole base of the body, that stability, that steadiness, groundedness, support. And the support rising up and opening through the body as well. Sometimes we can have an image of a mountain supported by the base, steady, rooted into the earth, then also rising up into the sky in the same way our body, heart and mind, rooted, grounded, supported by the contact with the earth and rising up into the world out of that contact. Let's explore this for a few minutes in silence. Steady and grounded, gathered and rooted. Like a mountain. And at the same time, opening up and out into the world. Into the whole of the body. Opening to see where we are in this moment, what's unfolding in experience. Seeing if we can invite ourselves, invite awareness to rest into the base of the body, to rest into the contact with that which is supporting the body. With whatever is here, can we feel the stability of being like a mountain, sitting like a mountain? Contact the rootedness with the earth, growing out of the earth, of the ground. And the opening of awareness through the whole body and out into the world. Grounded and rooted at the same time, open. Expansive. Exploring this balance through your body or through awareness. Just that sense. Sitting like a mountain. Growing up and out into the sky, into the vastness. Let's keep exploring in this way. Right now, in this moment, opening to what is arising, inviting the steadiness, the groundedness. The stability. Right here. In this sitting. In this body, in this presence. Can we find steadiness? Mountainhood. With whatever is appearing. Resting into the support. Like a mountain reaching up and out into life. Staying steady with whatever comes. Rain or sun, day or night, coolness or heat. Grounded, rooted, open with it all. A whole range of rootedness and vastness. We can let that vastness grow and open. The different phenomena that appear in experience. The sounds, the breath, the body. Even the mental aspects of experience all appearing in this grounded vastness. Like clouds passing in the sky, like weather passing over and through a mountain. And we keep coming back to that stability and steadiness of mountainhood. That vastness rising up into the world, steady with everything. For the last couple of minutes, once again, the steadiness and the vastness, the groundedness and the expansiveness opening all of life with compassion, with tenderness, with appreciation, including the joys and the sorrows, all present in the vastness of awareness, all held in the groundedness of mountainhood. The bell will ring in a moment, not rushing, staying grounded and steady and rooted, feeling the vastness, the openness through the body and through awareness as we allow the sound of the bell to flow through. Taking your time to shift position if you wish, to open your eyes if you wish, there's no rush. Maybe I'll use this transition for a poem that I was reminded of as we were meditating just there. It's by the Chinese poet Li Po. And it says, all the birds have vanished into the sky, and now the last cloud drifts away. We sit here together, the mountain and I, until only the mountain remains. Sometimes it can be a little bit challenging to speak after a meditation, perhaps also to listen, so we can open to that, to be aware, to be gentle with ourselves. And the theme that I'd like to explore today is the theme of equanimity. And it's a theme that so much can be said about, so much can be explored with. And so there's no way I will be, you know, comprehensive today. It's just touches on this theme, and particularly around the possibilities to practice with equanimity in our daily life, not just as we are doing now. In our formal practice. So I want to say a little bit about equanimity upekkha in Pali in the context of Dharma teachings. And to say, for me, I find equanimity, the image that comes to me is like a diamond. Yeah. And particularly the aspect of the diamond that has so many faces. Yeah. It's multifaceted. It's got all these angles. Yeah. And so equanimity is like that. It has a lot of aspects, a lot of flavors, a lot of dimensions, we can say. And I'm just going to mention some of them. There's many, but some of them we just touched on in the practice now. The quality of balance, yeah. The quality of steadiness and of stability, yeah. With the movement of our lives, within the movement of our lives, yeah. Not instead of. So these kind of, I was calling this mountainhood in the meditation, these qualities of balance, of steadiness, of stability, you know. And I love the image of a mountain here because we've got that wide base, yeah, rooted in the earth, immovable, yeah, it seems, yeah. And yet also, you know, that we have, you know, this growing up into the world and being touched by life. Yes, it's not separate, yeah, from life. There's groundedness, stability in the midst of you know, conditions that arise. Yeah. And so there's a quality of equanimity which is really so important to me, which is that equanimity is not distant. It's not about distance. It's not about separation. It's actually about closeness and intimacy with experience. Yeah. And that possibility that we can have of being close and intimate with experience, without getting sucked in to our usual modes of reactivity. Yeah. So there's quite a jewel there. And I'll just say it again. Yeah. Possibility to be intimate. Yeah. Close to our experience, yeah, without getting sucked into our habitual modes of reactivity. Yeah, so we have closeness, we have intimacy, and we also have perspective, yeah, and wisdom. Yeah, so in Buddha Dharma, upekkha, equanimity is very, very much imbued, connected, resting on wisdom and leading to wisdom. Yeah. Some of the translations of the word upekkha, yeah, in Pali, equanimity, both can be translated as to look over things, so to have perspective, and also to see closely. Yeah, it's beautiful, right? Same word. It has both those meanings, yeah, depending on the translator. To look over things, to see with perspective, to see with understanding, or to see closely. And so that both of these, yeah, the perspective and the seeing intimately and closely, they are a seeing that frees us. They're insightful. Yeah? The relationship between equanimity and insight, liberating insight, which we're so interested in. So upekkha, equanimity, can be... you know, a lot of the time we experience it as a fruit of our practice. Yeah, something that kind of matures through our practice. And we probably all know it. Yeah, we know this in our experience. It may be, you know, some small things just in the formal practice. Yeah, when we can come back to the object of our meditation from distraction. Yeah. And there's less judgment there. There's just a more natural kind of abiding again in presence. Now that's, we can say that's a fruit of the practice, a fruit of equanimity, not getting so caught up in the modes of reactivity, of judging ourselves, beating ourselves up, thinking that something's wrong with the practice or with us. Just the simplicity, just the coming back. That can be one mode where we meet it as a fruit of the practice. We do this enough, yeah, and then we see it arising, yeah, and changing. So ways that we react differently or respond differently, and we're not so caught up in reactivity. And sometimes seeing things differently. So it may be in formal practice, it may be something else, you know, something that used to be a big deal. And then suddenly we find, oh, I'm not reacting in the same way. I'm not making such a story of this. Or I'm not, you know, kind of attributing it all to me. Yeah? Just seeing it, yeah, with more perspective, with more understanding. And I hope we can reflect, each of us, yeah, moments when we know this, where that flavor of equanimity is actually there for us. So equanimity can definitely be a fruit of our practice. And it's also a quality that we actively cultivate in the practice. Yeah, so it's both. It's a fruit of the practice and something that we can cultivate and develop intentionally. Yeah, that movement from reactivity to response, or we can say from dukkha to freedom, from ill-being, from dissatisfaction to freedom, to wakefulness, to well-being. Now that movement is something we can cultivate with intention. And so in order to really be true to my intention of kind of bringing equanimity practices and teachings into daily life situations, I'm going to use two teaching stories from life. And these are two from daily life. These are two stories that practitioners shared with me, and I have their permission to share them in Dharma Talks. Actually, I have to confess, as soon as they told me the story, I said, oh, can I use it in a Dharma Talk? I thought they were really good. Let's see what you think. So here's the first one, yeah, teaching story about how equanimity can be there, how it can arise, how we can recognize it in the midst of a daily life situation. This is from a friend of mine who is an acupuncturist, and she works part-time in an oncology ward in a hospital. Yeah, so she works part-time, you know, with cancer patients in a cancer treatment ward in a hospital. And because she's in a hospital, she wears a uniform, kind of scrubs, and her uniform looks exactly like a nurse's uniform. So she's kind of gotten used to people approaching her, thinking she's a nurse, and asking her questions that she can't answer because she's not a nurse. And so she's kind of gotten used to being approached by people with a variety of things, and then just saying, oh, sorry, I'm not a nurse, and directing them to other people. This is the background, yeah, directing to the nurses. So one day she's at work, and she needs to type up some notes, and the available computer is at the nurse's station. So she's sitting there using the computer, yeah, typing up her notes, doing her job in her scrubs, yeah. And it turns out she's the only person at the nursing station. All the nurses are off, you know, attending to patients in different places. And a family member of one of the patients approaches her. There she is, she's working on the computer. She hears someone approaches and she looks up, and there's this very upset person standing right in front of her, and she described it like right there. Yeah. Very upset, very distraught person. Yeah, right there in her face. And the person is, you know, has just realized, yeah, that her family member is dying. Yeah, not in that moment, but that is the process. That's where it's leading. And they've just realized, very upset. And she comes to my friend, she's standing there, and she's yelling at her, do something, you know, do something, save him. Yeah. Do something. And in that moment, you know, my friend describing the sense of, you know, she's right there and she's in my face. And I can see that also her brother's death is in her face. She's facing that. and I'm here. I'm the one that's available. So there's a sense of, in this moment, there's nothing I can do. There's nowhere I can go except here, and to be here present with this other person in their suffering. Yeah. And so she stays there silent, steady, yeah, maintaining eye contact, yeah, staying in contact, listening, yeah, just like we were practicing now, really steady and stable in the body, yeah, in the seat, grounded, rooted, yeah, but also open and present, yeah, to the other person, yeah, receiving the anger, yeah, in equanimity, which is, you know, colored with compassion, of course, in this case, yeah, but there's deep equanimity there, yeah, not going to the usual habit of finding somebody else. No, you know, I'm here. This is me. I'm here. This is mine to work with, yeah, to be with, yeah. So having in that moment the stability, the balance, the steadiness, the presence, yeah, to stay connected, yeah, not to follow the reactivity of disconnecting, not to follow the reactivity of passing it on to someone whose job it is, yeah. Just staying there in silence with the real sense of presence. I am here, and I am here for you. Yeah, I'm here for you, for the other person. So there they are, yeah, in this moment in time, yeah, with this realization of impending death and this stability and presence of holding the space, even though what's directed at her is anger, yeah. But seeing beyond that, yeah, remember that, seeing with perspective, seeing with understanding, and seeing closely, yeah. And so the nurses then arrive because they hear the yelling, yeah. And they arrive and they kind of take over. Yeah. They kind of move the person a little further away, yeah, to a quieter place, and they speak with them, they speak with her. Yeah. Having that, and my friend describes, like, even, you know, even from the distance, staying present, not going back to a computer. Staying present, continuing to hold the space for this other person, continuing to feel the compassion, yeah, as the anger, you know, dissolves into grief. Yeah. Continuing to be present. And that deep sense of being the right person, yeah, in the right place. That deep sense, I am here, this is mine to care for. Yeah, so I hope we can see this rising up of equanimity, a fruit of the practice, yeah, fruit of the practice, and a gift to oneself, yeah, and a gift to another, being able to hold the space in that way, not trying, yeah, to fix it, to solve it, to make it go away, but staying steady and present and loving, yeah. That kind of bringing forth the appropriate response of sensitivity and recognition of presence and compassion and of spaciousness, and allowing it all to flow through, the anger flowing through, not getting stuck in the person, not getting stuck in her, yeah, the grief flowing through, yeah, not rigid, not stuck. Not getting tight, staying relaxed and loose, yeah, like a mountain. So hopefully this story, I wanted to share it because I think we can feel the support and the richness of equanimity, how much it can be there for us and through us for others, yeah, and how interrelated, how closely woven it is with compassion, the two not separate from each other. But, you know, for this depth of compassion to be there, equanimity needs to be there to hold it. They co-arise, they arise together. And that capacity to meet, to hold, yeah, these moments of human grief, yeah, and loss with that mountainhood that we were practicing today. So that's the first story, and I hope we get a taste from it of the kind of equanimity arising as a fruit of our practice. And then, of course, there's something then also of like being willing, of saying yes to it, that means we continue to cultivate it. Yeah. And I wanna share another story. It's quite different, yeah, but equally beautiful, at least in my eyes. And this is a story someone shared with me about having a mother-in-law that lives in a different country, and they had quite a difficult relationship, not an easy relationship. And the mother-in-law is coming to visit for a month, a month-long visit, staying with them in their house. And so, again, my friend describing this, saying, you know, I realized I have this image of our relationship as a relationship of discord and argument, and actually having this image of my mother-in-law as a person of discord and argument. Yeah. And so in that realization, there's already equanimity, just the capacity to see clearly, oh, this is how I see it. I see the relationship like this. I'm defining it in quite a narrow way, also defining the other person in this way. So seeing that rigidity of the view, and how that rigidity of view is the wisdom, then shapes perception. Yeah. It shapes perception. If I view somebody as a person of argument and discord, it's quite likely that that's what I'm going to see. That's what I'm going to experience. Yeah. So the equanimity, again, holding this process of inquiry. And the wisdom coming in and saying, yes, it feels rigid. It feels like that's how she is, or that's how we are. And yet I know Dharma teachings tell me nothing is fixed. Everything is changeable. Yeah. It can be adapted. It can be shaped. And so what if I see this month, yeah, instead of this kind of real difficult thing that I need to get through, if I see it as a retreat, if I see it as a practice opportunity, yeah. So we can already see the equanimity in the intention, right? Okay, I'm changing my attitude. I'm willing to take this on, yeah? Willing to take this on to develop equanimity. That was actually the intention. And to develop wisdom and to develop compassion, to develop clear seeing. I'm going to see this as my practice, this relationship. I'm going to see this situation as a retreat. And a one-month retreat, how wonderful. Yeah, to be able to do that. And so with that intention, already the whole thing shifts, right? Because intention impacts, shapes experience. Yeah. And so, you know, being really then interested in her experience, noticing in the interactions when she would begin to be triggered by something that was said or done. Yeah, by the other person, and then finding the appropriate response. So sometimes going into another room, yeah, she said sometimes she would do it. She would feel, oh, I'm getting too triggered. It's going to result in an argument. I'm just going to remove myself. Yeah. Going to another room, go for a walk. Yeah. Not giving in to the reactivity. They're not feeding the reactivity. Yeah. It's really interesting and seeing all of that. And when I don't feed the reactivity in me, I don't feed the dynamic between us, which is about reactivity bouncing back and forth. Yeah. Reactivity bouncing back and forth. And I want to just kind of say here, this isn't an absolute. I'm not giving you a prescription through the story of how you should always behave. Yeah. Or act or live. Yeah. This is a practice in a particular situation that someone wanted to take on and was able to take on. And what is interesting for us is what can be learnt from this. Yeah. What can be learned? So this was one practice. Yeah. Just realizing I'm seeing in a different way. It's a particular way. I'm kind of seeing rigidly the person, the relationship, opening out again, around it. Yeah, releasing that rigidness. Another is noticing when I get triggered and then removing myself from the situation so the reactivity doesn't build up. Yeah. A third was to bring in compassion practice. Yeah. And to really encourage herself to see this is not a happy way to be. Yeah. If someone walks around and is constantly picking fights, yeah, with other people, yeah, sensitive to arguments, being triggered by things that are, you know, not meant to hurt, this is not a happy way to be. So seeing that and that bringing compassion, yeah, and actively practicing compassion. So that was one thing that she was practicing, yeah, compassion towards the mother-in-law. Another thing that she was practicing was gratitude and appreciation because, you know, this person also has good sides and moments of kindness and generosity. And the most, you know, the thing that would bring the most gratitude was, she raised the man I love. Yeah, my partner. And, that brings gratitude and appreciation. Yeah. So we can see, yeah, how compassion and joy, appreciation, gratitude, you know, co-conspirators with equanimity is part of the immeasurables, the Brahma Viharas, for those who know them, yeah, kind of come into play and support the equanimity. When I practice compassion, yeah, I can see increases my range in that direction. Yeah, to see that other person, not just as the one who triggers me or whose behaviors triggers me, but actually someone who suffers. And equally, I open the range to the other side, yeah, and open up the perspective to see what I appreciate, what I'm grateful for about them. Yeah, so the whole range increases and we have more perspective. We have more understanding. We have more wisdom. Yeah, equanimity opens up through that. And so during this month, the relationship changed. And this is really interesting to see. It was easier for my friend to be generous and kind and compassionate towards her mother-in-law. And her mother-in-law had her own reactivity, had nobody to bounce up against. So it just ended up going into space and dissolving. Yeah. So she wasn't getting built. Her side wasn't getting built up either. Yeah. And she even said to her daughter-in-law at some point, wow, you know, things are so different this time. I think you've really changed. Yeah. I think you've really changed. And you know, we were talking about it and saying, well, both changed. Yeah. Because the perception of the other changes and then we change. It's so beautiful to see that. Yeah. And then we change and then the perception the other has of us changes. Yeah. And so it just keeps feeding in a positive cycle, a positive loop. So this change over time, the shift from reactivity to response. And so, you know, it's not, equanimity is not a kind of passive state. Yeah? It takes a lot of determination and action to kind of resist from being reactive, from getting triggered. Yeah? It takes a lot of determination to remove ourselves or to bring in compassion. Yeah, that shift from reactivity to responsiveness, yeah, benefits everyone in the situation and, of course, continues to benefit larger and larger circles. So a deepening of practice, yeah, an experiential understanding of what is possible, not just for this one practitioner, but hopefully through her story for us as well. And I really... want to emphasize here, this is possible for all of us. Yeah. Maybe not in this, you know, one specific formula, but to see where can we cultivate this shift from reactivity to responsiveness? Where can we cultivate seeing, yeah, with understanding? Yeah. Where can we cultivate upekkha? How can we bring into practice the wisdom that we have? How can we recognize the fruits of our practice, like equanimity, yeah, which in itself kind of deepens the insight? Yeah. So it's possible for all of us in small moments and in larger events, larger happenings in our lives. And it can be really meaningful to notice when does equanimity arise naturally, yeah, and to dwell in those moments, to know them, to feel them, to absorb in them, and to also practice it intentionally, yeah, both on our meditation seat and outside of it, beyond it, and things that can really help, yeah, to pause. Yeah, that really helps. Pausing helps to notice what's going on, including when we're being triggered. And if we pause and we notice we're being triggered and we relax, which is another thing we can do, then we can then extend the pause if we need to by removing ourselves from the situation, either physically or mentally. Yeah. Our grounding in the body, yeah, can really be helpful. Breathing deeply can be really helpful. Yeah. These are all ways that we practice equanimity in the moment, because we create a little bit of space and a pause and some degree of relaxation opens up the identification with what's going on in that moment, opens up the possibility, yeah, with the easing of identification, for more responsiveness and less habitual reactivity. We can remember our intention, yeah, for this life, for this moment, for this event. Yeah, choose what's helpful in that moment. What's my intention here? Yeah, what's my intention? And that can really, again, ground us. We can remember this mountainhood that we are practicing today, really feeling we can do this in the moment, feeling the contact with the ground. Yeah, letting the awareness go down into the base of the body. If you're standing, it'll be your feet and your legs. Yeah, but really feeling that base really changes the perspective. Remembering that we all get hooked into rigidity of views. Yeah, believing that something is a certain way, that someone is a certain way. And when we're kind of caught in that belief, that's all we see. So sometimes just remembering, I'm caught in a view here. Yeah, how am I seeing this? Bringing interest. How am I seeing? What am I seeing? And can I imagine another way of seeing this same event, person, interaction? Yeah? And that just imagining another way, we don't have to believe in it or agree with it, but just imagining another way opens up the perspective again. Cultivating compassion and cultivating appreciation and gratitude. Those of you who know me, I'm not surprised that I'm saying this. Yeah. Great ways of developing and cultivating equanimity, because as I said, they increase the range, especially if we cultivate both, open up, stretch out what we are able to be with. And in that stretching out, opening out, there's more space. Yeah, there's that vastness that we are practicing with. And with any of these practices, yeah, any of these practices, feel any change, release and relief that arise with them. Yeah. Absorb in it. Enjoy it. That's how insights are absorbed and digested. Yeah. And how we deepen with them and into them. So I hope this was and will be helpful to you on your path in your lives. And before we open up to questions, I just want to say a little bit about Dana practice and the opportunity that we have here to really, again, open into that spaciousness of equanimity, but with a sense of wonder. Yeah. So these sessions are offered completely in the spirit of Dana, which means they're freely offered. Yeah, there's no entry fee to be here. And I just think that's so, just what happens to us when we ponder that, when we open to that. And as George said at the beginning, it doesn't mean that there's no expenses. And this makes it even more wonderful. Yeah. It means that there's a choice here to offer in this way, so that this is freely available to all. Yeah. To all, regardless of their finances. Everyone is welcome to be here, to practice, to share in the Dharma. Yeah. And there's that invitation for us to participate, for all of us, to participate in supporting these sessions to continue, to support the Dharma to continue to flourish in the world. And so if you're able to, if you wish to, And again, as was said, there's no pressure, and you're equally welcome to be here, whatever your circumstances are. But if you wish to support and are able to support, you can click on the green Give Dana button, which is just underneath the video screen, and that will take you through to the Dana page. And whatever you offer tonight will be shared between Sangha Live, the platform, for all the ongoing expenses that they have, and myself, to support me in continuing offering the teachings. So thank you for your Dana and your generosity. And I will open to questions now. So there is the Ask a Question box there, just at the menu bar at the bottom of the screen. If you would like to ask a question, please click on that box and put your question in there, and I will read it out and respond. Once those questions in the Ask a Question box, you can also go in and vote for questions that you would like to have a response to. And that kind of supports me. If I have to make a choice between which questions to respond, I can respond to those who more people would like to hear a response to. So yeah, all questions are welcome about the practice today, the teachings today, or anything to do with your practice that you'd like to ask. And if you'd like to come on screen for a question, please let George know. And you can do that also through the Ask a Question box, and he will bring you on screen. You know, while we are here seeing if any questions arise, it's always a opportunity to sit and breathe, feel the body. Perhaps explore practicing equanimity in any of the ways that I mentioned. Remembering our intention, or pausing and relaxing, breathing. Noticing if there's a particular view we're holding. Bringing compassion. And joy. There's a question there. How is your friend doing now, the one who was mistaken for a nurse? She's doing really well. Thanks for the question, Jo. She found that experience very powerful and affirming. The sense of being able to be there for someone beyond what they were manifesting, you know, and we can feel, I think, how precious that can be. Yeah, someone is manifesting anger. But we can, with equanimity, pierce through that layer, and actually be there with the pain that's underlying that manifestation of anger. And so I think that can be, and is for my friend, very empowering to see that. And she said that she walked away from the situation and out of the hospital that day. And then also reflecting on it, this stayed with her for a long time, actually really empowered and feeling quite strong, strengthened by it, in a very soft, this is the power of equanimity. It's like a very soft strength. Yeah, it's not hard, but it's very, very empowering and very beautiful. Okay, see, we have quite a few questions popped in. Any further advice regarding cultivating equanimity within an intimate relationship with a partner where there are sometimes constant arguments? Yeah, thank you, Anne. That's a good question. And of course, you know, whatever I say now will be general. So I just want to say that because it's so individual, depending on the relationship, the individuals, the dynamics, the kind of overall situation that you're in. I would say that I would bring the base here to be a practice of compassion, both for yourself in that situation and for your partner. Yeah. When there's like a lot of arguments within an atmosphere of love, but there's a lot of arguments. Also bringing in a sense of the gratitude and appreciation for the good things about the other person. Yeah. And that can really help to kind of have a base that's not just the arguments, yeah, but a base of clarity around what you appreciate about the other, what you appreciate about the relationship, and what you appreciate about yourself in the relationship. And then also where the compassion needs to go with all of those. Yeah. And in when there's an argument going on, I would, if it's possible for you to base yourself in the body, that can be incredibly helpful. Yeah. So the attention will go to the head and the talking, and that, you know, we get disconnected. If we can keep bringing the attention to the body, feet, hands are really good, the base of the body, the breath, they're all good anchors for us, so that we're rooted in something bigger than just the words being flung at us and the words coming out of us. Slowing things down, yeah, also really, really helpful for equanimity and wisdom in general. So slow down. We tend to go fast. This is also the equanimity, right? It's like ping pong, like table tennis. It goes very quick, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, the reactivity. We want to cultivate equanimity in these situations and just slowing things down. And if you speak more slowly, that will also impact the other person. This is really, really interesting. Yeah. Speak more slowly. Take times to breathe. Can really help things down. Reflect after an argument. Reflect with yourself. What happened there? Yeah. What was the dynamic? What was going back and forth? Yeah. If I remember myself in the situation and I bring my attention to the body now, was there something I could have done differently? And how I was responding in the view I was holding. Yeah. And if it's helpful, also have reflection with your partner, yeah, outside of an argument dynamic. Yeah. Outside of an argument dynamic, you know, but what happened there? What was it like for you? Be interested. Yeah. And the last thing I would say, I mean, it's a lot of things, is also keep expanding the space of what you're aware of. So just like you're aware of your own body, see if you can also be aware of the other person's body language, facial expressions, tone. Yeah, not just the words. Yeah, pick up on more cues. You might actually feel, oh, they're saying hurtful things, but actually, yeah, I can see something in the body language. They're defensive, so they're feeling threatened. Why are they feeling threatened? How can I make them feel more safe? Yeah, so that can be something to use. And I see that Les put in a very good suggestion there about nonviolent communication. And yeah, that can be one-sided and be very helpful. And sometimes, you know, we need someone to moderate if it's ongoing issues around particular themes. We might need someone external to moderate. So that might also be helpful. Okay. Do you have any suggestions about how we might relate to major events we hear or read about? Sorry, jumped up. The major events we hear or read about that bring a reaction of sadness, like war, aggression, or fear for our children's future, such as climate change, where we have no sense of control, but we need to manage our feelings with compassion. Yeah, great question. Thank you. Yeah, equanimity is a great resource here. Yeah, a really, really great resource. And I think on several levels, Yeah. One is just to open up the space to the bigger picture. Yeah. And know that on the one hand, we cannot control everything that happens. Yeah. But on the other, what we do has an important impact. So we can cultivate in ourselves and in the world around us. Yeah. What the antidotes, we can say, or the opposite of what we are seeing in the world that is distressing us. So we can cultivate peacefulness, yeah, and metta, yeah, goodwill, when we are concerned about war and aggression. Yeah, we can cultivate care, yeah, and awareness of interconnectedness when we're concerned about climate change. Yeah, we can just keep remembering this bigger picture. Sometimes, you know, we see things and it feels, this is where the narrow view can come in, that there's only one way this is going. Yeah. And we don't actually know that. But at the same time, we do know what the right response is right now in this moment. It can be very, very immediate. Yeah. And just be the next right step, as a friend of mine likes to say. But it's something we can do. So it's really helpful to keep encouraging ourselves to connect to agency and empowerment. Because, you know, the lack of it is also in our mind. There's always something that we can do. Yeah. And yes, we have no control. Yeah. We have no control. And at the same time, there's something we can do. Yeah, that's kind of, this is equanimity as well, holding that seeming contradiction. Yeah. And definitely, as you write, bringing a lot of compassion to your experience. Yeah. A lot of compassion to your experience and towards others. And some of you know this because this is one of my latest things that I really find very helpful, is to have compassion towards ignorance. So at the root of aggression, at the root of the greed and aggression that is fueling the climate crisis, there is ignorance. And we can bring compassion to ignorance, yeah, which doesn't mean that we don't act to try and change it, but we can do that with compassion, even if we perhaps can't bring compassion to a particular person or group that we feel is responsible for the difficult situations we see. So I hope that was helpful, Teresa. Yeah. When unable to reach a state of balance and calm around emotions I cling to and hold tightly, how can I approach my own thinking? Yeah. Yeah. So I would probably say, if you can, as a first step, work with the body. Yeah. Because as you're saying very clearly and beautifully here, yeah, there can be emotions that trigger a lack of balance and clinging, yeah? And these emotions will usually come with a lot of thinking activity. And thinking is often very tricky, very sticky for us. Yeah, we get caught up in it, yeah? It's difficult to unhook from the reactivity through directly working with the thinking or the emotions. So if you can work with the body, just bring the awareness to the body and feel where in the body, yeah, is this emotion or this thought pattern manifesting? Yeah. And just kind of bringing that sense, and it might be particular body sensation that can, and we can work with that then. Yeah. Bring some soothing to that, invite it to relax and to open, to soften. It might be that you don't find a particular place, but you just bring the awareness to the body and you work with the body as a whole. Yeah. Might be just soothing breaths, calming breaths. Now, it may be that you soften and open the whole breath like we're doing in the meditation. And that can help just open up the space, bring the focus from the emotions, the clinging and the thinking, to a bigger space. And that relaxing of the body eases that clenched fist, that clenched holding, yeah, onto the emotions. Yeah, so I hope that gives you something to work with. And please let me know if I need to kind of adapt my response a little bit more. Yeah. How do you balance being compassionate and at the same time protecting yourself and others with a person in your life who is harmful towards other members of the family? Yeah, so this is about compassion. So compassion is sometimes about drawing boundaries. Yeah. In many different ways, one of which you're describing, if there is someone in your life whose behavior is harmful to yourselves or others, sometimes you need to draw the boundaries. And that is the most compassionate thing you can do. And we can draw boundaries with compassion. Yeah. Just today I was talking to someone and saying the same thing about a very different situation of just having too much responsibility for things and saying, you know, sometimes, you know, someone else is coming and asking you to be involved in a project. And the compassionate thing is actually to say, look, I can't take this on because I've already doing too much. I won't actually be able to do it skillfully and usefully with you as well. Yeah. So that's also drawing a boundary. Yeah. Saying no. Yeah, in a compassionate way. It's of course much more tricky to do when this involves family. Yeah. And or people that are close to us. And then it brings a sense of, oh, I'm not being compassionate. I'm not being caring. If I draw a boundary, but sometimes remembering the boundaries are helpful because, that's the best you can do in the situation. And when you draw a boundary that stops somebody else from acting harmfully, you're also protecting them. Yeah, this is something that we easily forget and the teachings really emphasize. Yeah. And then be there or, you know, do what you can so that the person has support. But it may be that the boundary is the most compassionate thing that you can do. And a lot of self-compassion with that for yourself. It's not an easy thing to do. Yeah. Will you speak to the difference and interconnectedness of equanimity of mind, heart, and spirit? So I will do my best. I'm not sure what you mean by spirit. In Buddha Dharma, mind and heart are one thing. So the word in Pali is citta. And it literally translates as heart, mind, mind, heart. And so that will be the equanimity of mind will be the equanimity of heart. One, and we can say as equanimity deepens, it will actually be equanimity of the whole space, because the body also needs to be in a space of balance, steadiness, spaciousness, yeah, in order for the mind and heart to be in a place of upekkha, of equanimity. Yeah. And yeah, if you want to clarify what you mean by spirit, maybe I can address that as well. I'm struggling with the concept of all things have no inherent existence. Could you explain your understanding of that Buddhist truth? Okay, just a short one to end. Wonderful. Thank you, Jackie. It's my favorite question. It really is. What does it mean? Yeah, that no thing exists inherently. Or in another way of saying it, that all things are empty of inherent existence. This is, you know, the question, the exploration for our practice and our understanding. So it's really fine to be struggling with this. It's actually, I would be much more concerned if you say, oh, I get this, because it's a very deep insight and it goes more and more deep as we progress on the path. What does it mean that something doesn't have inherent existence? Basically, we can say what it means is that no thing exists separately of other things. Yeah. So inherent existence means existing separately and exclusively and distinctly from other things. Yeah. So right now we can say, we'll just take, I don't know, I'll take this cup. Yeah. Doesn't exist from its own side separately. Yeah. It's reliant on the materials that it's made of, the person who made it. Yeah. Person who sold it to me in a charity shop, person who brought it to the charity shop. Yeah, its existence is dependent. It's also, and this is where it gets interesting, dependent on our perception for us to see it and to recognize it as a cup. Yeah. Someone who'd never seen a cup before might think it's just a yellow object. Yeah. So maybe we can start in this way to see nothing exists separately from other things. Everything is dependent. Yeah. And countless other causes and conditions, including the mind that is perceiving it. Yeah. So that's really in a nutshell. Yeah. But just maybe kind of rephrasing from all things have no inherent existence to no thing exists inherently from its own side, or no thing exists separate and independent from other things. Yeah. Everything is conditioned, yeah, and reliant on other conditions, on other things in order to exist. Yeah. And in order to be perceived and known to exist. So I hope that responds to you, Jackie. And magically enough, this brings us right to our time. So, deep gratitude to all of you for being here, for your wonderful practice, your questions, and your listening. And thank you in advance for your dana. And really happy to have been here with you all. And wish you well on your path. I will be leading the daily meditations this week. So for those of you who attend those, I'll see you tomorrow morning, European time zones, and later in our day, but still your morning for those in the American time zones. Thank you. Go well, everyone.